Good morning. It's bourbonblog.com, and we've just received news that Maker's Mark is rinsing barrels now to extract more bourbon out of the barrel. First, it was reducing proof. Now it's rinsing barrels, trying to get every last drop of that bourbon they can to satisfy demand. I have on the phone with me here live, it's the U.S. brand ambassador for Compass Box Whiskey, my good friend Robin Robinson. How's it going, Robin?
Hey, I'm well, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm glad I saw your Facebook post asking this question. How will this affect Scotch industry? Because so many of these barrels, used bourbon barrels from Maker's Mark and all the bourbon brands, go over to Scotland.
Yeah, and that was the first thing that occurred to me. What Maker's Mark wants to do with the production of their own whiskey, that's up to them and their their drinking fans. But you know, what's interesting is because of the amount of production of Maker's Mark whiskey, their secondary market for those barrels go to other countries, and their primary trading partner for a number of years has been Scotland. The interesting thing about Scottish whiskey, and this I believe is a pretty much agreed upon industry assumption, that there are about maybe 93-94% of all of the Scotch whiskey being aged in Scotland right now are ex-whiskey barrels. And for that, it depends on what was in that barrel to actually inform the flavor of a lot of Scotch whiskeys. So the remainder of those barrels, the 7, 8, or 9%, are ex-sherry barrels. That used to be the predominant way in the early part of the 20th century up to about the mid-20th century to age Scottish whiskeys was in ex-sherry barrels, but then bourbon barrels became the barrel of choice for a number of reasons. And what bourbon gets from those barrels is what was in that barrel, and what was in that barrel was whiskey, bourbon whiskey. So now that Maker's Mark is making, it looks like, a decided choice across the board to apply this rinse process, those barrels then will be depleted of a lot of what was valued by Scotch whiskey makers to inform the Scotch whiskey. So where does that leave the Scotch whiskey industry over a period of time?
Not only is it Scotch, we have the Scotch is where most of these barrels are sent. They sell the barrels to the Scotch distilleries. It's also beers, a lot of craft beers, age.
Well, Irish whiskey, Irish whiskeys, Japanese whiskey. You know, everyone is ramping up production now because of the worldwide demand for all types of whiskey. And Scotch whiskey, you know, which has the broadest global reach. The demand is just phenomenal. You know, you look at the irony of the 80s when they were shutting down distilleries because of the lack of demand. And now you've got here in the early part of the 21st century, Diageo, Pernod Ricard are increasing not only their production, but they're building new distilleries in Ireland, which once had, you know, hundreds, at one point maybe even 1,000 distilleries. It was reduced down to 3, and now you see William Grant is going to be building a new distillery there. Beam Global now owns the Cooley Distillery. So everyone is ramping up production of whiskey. And here we are now with maybe one of it's the canary in the gold mine of the effects of that, right? The effects of that is this balance of trade, this balance of used materials, in this case, ex-bourbon barrels, that were used to inform the whiskey of another land. And now we see a wrinkle in that. May have an effect. It may not have an effect. I have a feeling that's going to have quite an effect over a period of time.
So by making this one decision to extract just a little bit more bourbon, to get a little more bourbon to put in the bottle, this could have a real ripple, and send what seems like a small decision could send a huge wave throughout the whole whiskey industry.
Oh yeah,
in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, Maker's Mark, their production is huge, and so that's going to have a huge ripple effect, I believe, on all of the secondary markets in which those barrels are being used. And
How much more bourbon do you think they'll get out of a barrel by, you know, when you were saying a couple, we'll get to that in a moment, the couple of times sweating it, swig, do you think they're going to get much more bourbon out of it?
Devil's Cut was the first. It was the first attempt to go and into production with a whiskey that used alongside of the liquid that was being aged in the whiskey. It added to it this more intensely flavored liquid that was pulled out of the wood. And from what I understand, they have a proprietary, I guess, super secret skunk works project of putting hot water in a barrel and then setting it up in some sort of centrifuge that spins it at such a high rate it's able to extract deeper out of the wood than just soaking it in hot water. So I remember talking to a couple Canadians a few years ago. They told me that there was something that they called swig. It was something that they did when they would just find all these old barrels of rye whiskey that were being made in Canadian distilleries. And they would just take them home and they would soak them in hot water. It would extract some of the whiskey and they'd be able to drink that. You know, it was kind of sort of like a cheap high that high school kids or college kids used to do with ex-Canadian barrels. So there is a tradition of this, and sweating a barrel is something that has been done in bourbon distilleries for years. But this looks like it's now moved to a completely different level, because this looks like part of the overall business plan for Maker's Mark.
Do you think the whiskey will taste any different after they extract the bourbon from it? I mean, would you foresee there being much of a flavor difference?
I believe so. And all you have to do is actually pick up a bottle of Devil's Cut, and you can actually taste the difference between Jim Beam and Jim Beam Devil's Cut. I mean, there's a little bit more of an intensity of flavor there. Is that good or bad? I mean, again, that depends on the consumer, whether they like that or not. And I think there's a lot to debate. As it looks like already on my Facebook page, where I actually made the first post this morning, I've already got quite a few comments from a number of people on that. So this looks like it's gonna, you know, this looks like it's gonna be big for a while.
When a scotch is being aged in a used bourbon barrel, is a majority of that scotch's life kept in that one barrel, that one used bourbon barrel? I know sometimes it's finished in different barrels, a variety of barrels. For example, like the Dalmore King Alexander. But
sure. When
it comes to most scotches that are being used in these bourbon barrels, majority of that scotch's life is in that bourbon barrel.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the interesting thing about scotch whiskey, which is different than bourbon, and this is a primary difference, is that it's always a used barrel. It's always a used barrel. The SWA is very, very specific about this. The traditional taste of Scotch whiskey is from a used barrel. Now, in Scotland, the little secret of the Scotch whiskey industry is that they have no law that mandates a single use of a barrel. So you've got barrels in Scotland that have been used 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And every time a whiskey sits in that barrel, loses the impact of the wood, and there's three impacts. One's an extractive, you know, the cleansing of sulfurs out of the whiskey. One is an additive, which is the flavoring of the whiskey it gets from the wood. And the other one is an interactive, which is the oxidation that takes place. So every time a barrel gets used, those three properties get reduced more. And so by the time you get to barrel, you know, or to use, 3, 4, 5, you've got a neutral barrel.
And that would be balanced by the final flavor. That would be balanced by mingling different barrels from different places.
Exactly. And that the brilliance of blending is to be able to balance that out. But, you know, so here's the macro impact of an announcement like this. You know, over time, now you're going to have barrels that have started out in Scotland at the same level that we would now look at a third or a fourth fill, almost completely depleted bourbon barrel. Now, and then you put your first fill of scotch in there. So yeah, that could be one of the effects of the long term effect on it.
Is your fear that if Maker's Mark, as a leader in the industry, or one of the leaders, goes forward with this, which, you know, they could change their mind in a week as they did before. But if you go forward with this,
it depends on Twitter says is going to happen.
Right. But if they go forward with this, is your fear that all the other bourbon distilleries will fall in line with them and it will really affect, gosh, the Irish whiskey, the beers? I mean, is that your fear?
The concern is this. First of all, everyone understands why this is being done. Innovation is what drives everything, right? Innovation is what drives our tastes to a great degree. And it may happen over time. The one thing about the consuming public is that you don't have generational branding like you had back when, you know, the World War II veterans came back and they started drinking Dewars when they left the Army, and they're still in the country clubs today drinking Dewars, and they never changed, right? You don't have that anymore, right? So there's not much of an institutional memory out there for brands. So what that means is that, you know, if this works and if it proves to be effective, my guess is that in order for other distilleries to keep demand, they're going to borrow parts of this technique, and maybe over time they'll refine it.
I mean, would there be a replacement if all the bourbon distilleries started doing this and all the Scotch distilleries touted on those barrels to have that unique flavor profile? We're looking to those barrels, but couldn't get them anymore. You know, where would the Scotch industry go? I mean, what would they be? I'm sure they would figure something out, but what would the?
Yeah, that's interesting. The Scotch, you know, working with Compass Box over the years, I mean, Compass Box is known as, you know, the innovative bad boys of Scotch whiskey by using techniques like the inner barreling, the inner stave barreling of the original spice tree as a way of promoting innovation in the industry, and that. It was because the Scotch whiskey industry is not known for innovation. It really does overall rely on tradition and custom, and this is the way the things have been done. They're, you know, they have to be grappling. You know, Diageo, pretty much, you know, they own 29 distilleries. I mean, they pretty much are the leading hand in Scotch whiskey making. They're a global company, you know, if anybody's going to be pushing forward innovation. They might be the ones to find the way in order to actually increase their production. And Pernod Ricard and Edrington Group aren't going to be very far behind. You know, here's an interesting thing. There's a small, we've had a couple small independent distilleries open up in Scotland. Kilhoman, for example, the first distillery on Islay in 129 years that opened up a few years ago. And they're making whiskeys that are just wonderful and fabulous and young. You know, 3, 4, 5 year old whiskey. It proved that, you know, the age statement, you know, like what Compass Box has been saying for a long time, the age statement's not really the primary indicator. And that was a shake to Scottish tradition. Not the rules of making whiskey, but a Scottish tradition, you know. They have to be aged at least minimum 10 years to actually get the appropriate distillery character. Jim McEwen at Port Charlotte was doing the same thing. He was releasing those PC whiskeys. You know, they were young, but they were alive and vibrant. So those were shakes to traditional Scotch whiskey making. And I think something, you know, like this may actually spur some other innovations. There's a tiny little distillery in the outside of Edinburgh that no one's ever heard of because the guy has not released any whiskeys yet. And it's a tiny, tiny little, it's a little farm distillery. It's called Daft Mill, D-A-F-T-M-I-L-L. And this is a barley farmer who grows barley for large distilleries like Macallan. But, you know, he opened up a distillery a few years ago, and he's got one spirit still and one wash still in a tiny little garage, a barn that he stores his whiskeys in. And so here's a guy here that hasn't put any whiskey out of the market yet, and inside the whiskey industry is an enormous amount of anticipation because everyone really wants to taste this stuff.
I think it is important to look at how one decision can affect many and can affect, you know, a lot of the products that I enjoy, a lot of the bourbon beers. There's several in Kentucky that are made, and there's several that all over the country that are really tasty.
Yeah. I at the end of the day, we all know this is a bottom-line industry. And the spreadsheet rules. You can't let the bean counters run the business. You know,
right.
You can't let the bean counters, you know, they have an important part in it. And they're the ones who, you know, kind of maintain, you know, financial surety, but you can't let them run the business. And at the end of the day, the consumer is going to tell you who is, I mean, what is and what is not going to work. There's something to be said for that, but then let's see what the guy on the street really thinks. And if he doesn't really care, then, hey, make it happen.
You can only imagine there's going to be a rush to the liquor stores and have more people buying it, a whole lot more.
You know,
sure they have, exactly. Make sure they have a bottle when it tasted like that, right?
I'm getting it at 40, right, I'm getting it at original proof strength, and I'm getting it before they started putting soaked barrels in there, right?
Robin, hey, it's always a pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me this morning. It's been fun. I think that the questions you ask on Facebook are really worth noting and have really started a conversation, which we intend to keep going on bourbonblog.com so that people can talk about this interesting decision.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great talking with you as well, Tom.